Welcome to Platinum Property Training's podcast, where we will be talking about business, money, and let's not forget the economy, real estate, and bringing in real inspirations. These are people that are doing some great things in our world. Like, share, add this to your playlist, and subscribe to keep track of our updates. Okay, you beautiful people, sit back, relax, let's listen, and let's get down to business. So hi everybody and welcome back to Platinum Properties Podcast. Tonight we're taking the time to speak to Brian Kennedy, fantastic man. Brian is a motivational speaker, a mental health coach, and he wrote a fantastic book about his career in the banking world called The Bulletproof Banker. I'm really looking forward to tonight's episode. We're going to dig deep into the corporate world and Brian's going to give us plenty of nuggets to try and help you along your way. Sit back, relax and listen in. Brian Kennedy, you're very, very welcome to Platinum Property Training. You're very welcome to Platinum Studios. And we're going to try and dig into a little bit about your life and what you've encountered along the way. And you've read a fantastic book. So we might talk a little bit about that tonight as well. So great. Brian, just to open up.
Thanks for having me, Paul. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. You're no problem good. At all.
And love the studio and the place. It's amazing. You're doing amazing work here.
You like it?
Your place. Brilliant.
Absolutely. Lovely stuff.
Absolutely.
Well, I know as we were talking in the boardroom earlier on, your whole life was mortgages. Our whole life is trying to get them. We couldn't connect a good few years ago.
Three words that I learned to hate in my banking career was speed to offer.
Yeah.
Right. So, but sure, we might touch on that at some stage.
Yeah.
But just thanks for the introduction. I mean, I've spent 40 years working in banking.
Yeah.
Okay. And now I'm a motivational speaker. And a mental health coach.
Yeah.
A mental health and wellness coach, specifically helping people manage stress.
Yeah.
Because I still see the stress that I saw when I was in my work. Okay. And I wrote the book, The Bulletproof Banker, for everybody, but specifically for men, if I would say that. Because I believe our mindsets are different, okay, in certain ways. And I had a quick chat with you earlier, and I'll give you a bit of a story, okay? I am blessed with a beautiful wife and two kids.
Yeah.
I'm the luckiest man in the world. And I say that anywhere I go to speak, when I speak as a motivational speaker in companies. And I truly, truly believe that, okay? But I wasn't always aware of that.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's many reasons for that. And if we start at the start where my early educators, different to the way the education is done today, hopefully.
Yeah.
Thankfully. Okay. But it will show you, this will show you how important it is that if you're a manager today, if you're a leader today, I would like people to listen to what I'm going to say.
Brilliant.
Because the way in which they deal with their staff and manage their staff and bring their staff with them is very, very important, not only for helping people to succeed, but the damage that you can do to people's mental health.
Yeah.
Right. If you don't do it correctly. So I sit here in front of you with my gray hair.
Yeah.
The oldest man in the room.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's where we learn.
Right. Yeah. And my early educators, taught me fear and shame. And guilt.
Yeah.
And what happened was if I didn't get a question right, I was put standing at the top of the class.
Yeah.
I was put standing in the corner. And what I learned from that was it's not good if I don't know the answer.
Yeah.
Okay. And if I'm standing in the corner and I'm feeling sorry for myself and having a little pity party for myself and I start to sob, my early educator would come and probably, give me a little dig in the back and say, what are you crying?
Mm.
What are you crying for? Are you a girl?
Mm.
Men don't cry. When you grow up, you have a responsibility. You're going to have a family and you're going to have to look after this family.
Yeah.
You're going to go into a corner and cry. Okay. So you learned, don't show emotion. Showing vulnerability is failure. OK, Okay. And that's at 5, 6, 7 years of age.
Mm.
And in that educational system, I moved into a private college when I got older, and the education was even more brutal.
Yeah.
Okay. I could tell you what teacher, what color the electrical tape the particular teacher used on their letter strap or their cane that they used on us when we didn't know the answer.
Yeah.
Okay. So you learned you had to have the answer. And I brought that into my adult life subconsciously.
Yeah.
Not really realizing that I was doing that.
Mm.
And I think that's what a lot of men do.
Yeah.
Possibly a lot of ladies do it as well. But men in particular, we do stuff like that. And I had this urge in me. I had to succeed.
Mm.
I had to succeed. Not that I would put my foot on somebody's neck to get over them, because I felt that when I went for a job interview, we were all equal. Mm. The best person, naive sometimes enough to think that the best person would get the job.
Mm.
Okay. But I wanted to succeed. I badly wanted to succeed. I desperately needed to succeed. And any job I got, I was promoted in.
Mm.
But any job I was in, I was always looking for the next.
Yeah.
Opportunity. Okay. Which is not a bad thing, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not a bad thing. But the way in which you think about it, the way your mind is, your mindset, your self-awareness, all that kind of stuff is very important when you're going along in your career, whether it's in property or whether it's in banking or whatever it might be. So bringing that mindset into my corporate career, I wouldn't let anything get in the way. What do you mean, Brian? Well, I've been in 7 armed robberies in a banking career. I've had a gun to my head, a knife to my throat. You know, I've had my head slammed into the safe. And depending on the time of the day that robbery happened, the branch would reopen. And Brian would stand in front of customers again and serve them like nothing happened with a smile on his face.
So pause a second there. Yeah. Someone runs into the bank.
Yeah.
Was a gun to your head or the staff's head?
Yeah.
Police obviously come.
Yeah.
Investigations start.
Right.
And Brian decides.
No, the branch would reopen.
Fuck it, let's go again.
The branch would reopen.
And you just start serving away.
And we would serve customers again. Now, the thing is, talking about being a leader, the police would come and ask you, are you okay?
Yeah.
The bank management would come and ask how much was taken.
Yeah.
I remember that much, okay? But my mindset was that I needed to prove that I was worthy, that I could take this. Nothing was going to get in the way of me being successful. And I felt in my head that by doing that, people would see me worthy for promotion.
Because higher powers.
Because I could take the pressure and whatever. Okay. And by the way, you know, that's what men do, right? That's what you do if you want to be successful. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I taught. So 7 armed robberies, and had a head-on crash one day going into work in the morning. You know, the guy in the other car was taken away in an ambulance, and I waited till the police did all the stuff, and my car was taken away, and I walked to the office and went to work.
Right.
Because that's what men do, right? That's what you do when you want to be successful, right? You don't let anything get in the way. Right. Now, I'm a survivor.
Mm.
I marked a survivor very early in my life when my twin sister died when she was 3 months of pneumonia, and I got it first and I survived and she died. So right. I'm a survivor. I've always had this in my DNA. Nothing's going to get in the way of me being successful.
Mm.
So 7 armed robberies, the crash. I get promoted to being an assistant manager. Things are looking up.
Mm.
I have a voice in my head telling me, you're not good enough. My dad was an alcoholic. I loved him very much. I came from a loving family with four sisters. Okay. My mother was fantastic. My dad just fell into alcoholism, like many Irish families are scourged with that, with that disease. And the night of my maths exam and my leaving cert, my dad sat on my bed at 4 o'clock in the morning telling me, you know, I was a mammy's boy and I wasn't the amount to much. And I know that was the drink talking, but when you're 16 years of age, you kind of...
You're taking it in.
Listen, it hurts.
Yeah.
And if anybody asked me, I wouldn't tell them what he said.
Mm.
Okay. And I went to the exam that morning and I failed my maths and my leaving cert. Well, how am I going to be successful if I failed my maths and my leaving cert?
Yeah.
But I managed to get into a bank, work in a bank, and I resat my maths and I got to work in the bank. But you get the sense of this is what my head is like. I've got this voice in my head urging me to be successful.
Yeah.
But telling me I'm not good enough because that's what I learned from my early educators.
Mm.
So I'm going for a promotion in the bank and I go five times and five times I'm unsuccessful. But at that stage in my career, the bank would put me running a branch office for 6 months because some manager was sick. But if the manager's job came up, I wouldn't be successful.
Mm.
And it made no sense to me and it made no sense to the managers that I worked with in a branch because I was an assistant manager and I supported different branches in the city. And it made no sense. And I started getting paranoid, kind of going, well, the guys I'm working with are not supporting me. That's why I'm not getting promoted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And every time I'd go into the head office and you were told personally that you were unsuccessful.
Yeah.
I would go down to the church on Stephen's Green and I'd throw myself in front of the statue of Our Lady because I have a great faith, okay? And I would say, why is God not listening to my prayers?
Yeah.
Why am I not getting promoted? What am I doing wrong? Tell me. I was in genuinely turmoil in my head.
Trying to get success.
It was eating me alive from the inside out at that age, okay? And anyway, as things progressed, I got a very good mentor in the bank and I got an opportunity to manage some teams in their head office, which I cut my teeth in operational management.
Yeah.
Fantastic mentor who I mention in my book. Did I mention that? The Bulletproof Banker. Get your copy now on Amazon.
where, if someone wants to grab that tonight after the show, you can grab it on Amazon.
You can grab it on Amazon.de for delivery to Ireland, or they can contact me direct.
Yeah.
But anyway, so this particular guy, he really mentored me. I learned so much from him. He was fantastic. But the bank were going to merge with an insurance company.
Yeah.
And I knew that the opportunities that kind of had been promised to me were not going to happen.
Mm.
And I decided to leave. And before I left, the manager who was in charge of the promotions, the five promotions I didn't get, asked to see me. And at this stage, he was at home and he was dying with cancer. And I drove out to his house with another manager and we sat in the garden and it was like something out of Poirot. Beautiful, sunny day. He had a beautiful garden, lovely house. His wife came out with a tray of lemonade.
Yeah.
And we sat in the garden. And this man said to me, I heard you're leaving the bank. I just want to say to you that I didn't promote you all those years ago because you were too good at what you did and it suited me to keep you where you were. Now, let that sink in for a second.
Mm.
I am in turmoil in my head. I'm throwing myself in front of a religious statue. I'm thinking that I am useless.
Mm.
But actually, it's not that at all. I'm actually really good at what I do. And guy just held me back for his means.
Yeah.
So I didn't have the self-awareness. Now, fast forward, and I don't want to tell the whole story, right? But fast forward, I still had that, I needed to get on. Okay. And I got headhunted by two different banks in the state. And I'm working my socks off.
Yeah.
I'm working long hours. My wife was used to me working long hours. and my dad gets sick. And I happen to be sitting, I happened, of all the people, to be sitting beside him in the hospital bed when this doctor comes along, pulls across a curtain. Oh, Mr. Kennedy, how are you? Sorry, a bit of bad news. We can't do anything else for you. It's palliative care. The palliative care guys will be around this afternoon. But we can't do anything else for you. And the guy takes off.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there. And my dad has just been told he's going to die. Don't know whether anybody has ever sat beside somebody where you're told your life is coming to an end. Like, tomorrow's not promised to any of us.
Yeah.
Watching here, listening here, it's not. But we're working so hard. We're thinking about the future. We're living our lives at 100 miles an hour. And we forget that. And I'm kind of going, of all the people to be sitting beside my dad, how was it me? I didn't have a relationship with my dad.
Mm.
I loved my dad, but I didn't have a relationship with him. And I was terrified when I had kids, I would be my dad.
Yeah, we see this quite a bit.
Yeah. So my dad said to me, son, he didn't say Brian, and I can picture it now. He said, son, if I had my time over again, the things I would do differently. Now, you're sitting there and you're kind of going, I'd actually love to go and give my dad a hug.
Yeah.
But you don't show vulnerability. You're a man. You don't show emotion. I had this suit of armor on.
Mm.
That's what I learned from my early educators.
Yeah.
Right. And I go back to work. After 3 days, I bury my dad. I talk at his funeral. I go back to work. I'm working away. And my best friend gets diagnosed with cancer. And I get offered a new job in a different bank on a really good salary, with a really good bonus, with a really good profit share. And they're telling me what they're offering me. And I'm sitting here going, I can't believe this. This is what success is. This is what I've been chasing all my life. This is what I want. Okay. And I'm 47 and I'm kind of going, do I want to move organization again at 47, learn new people, prove myself to a whole new set of C-suite executives, whatever. Do I really want that pressure? So I go in to see my friend in hospital who's dying of cancer. And we're sitting there, the two of us, and we used to walk the beaches of Wexford together. And I ask him, do you think I should take the job? Where's my self-awareness?
Mm.
Talking to my best pal, dying in a hospital bed of cancer. And I'm thinking about my future and my career, and should I take the job?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. You see what's going on in my head?
Yeah.
See what's going on in my head?
Right. Didn't ask me how it is.
Men are like this, right? And we're like this when we don't slow down and we're constantly thinking of the future. So Larry says to me, you know you can do that job with your hands tied behind your back.
Mm.
You know that they're offering you great money for doing what you love. Okay? Getting people mortgages, by the way. Getting them into their houses. Right? Okay? And I took the job and we buried my friend and I spoke at his funeral and I went and worked in this bank and continued working at 100 miles an hour. And in 2010... when I was getting 300 emails personally a day, managing the back office function for two banks owned by a UK parent.
Yeah.
A certain thing happened one day. I had told them that they needed to take some work out of my teams. We were trying to do the daily work and we were trying to do projects.
Mm.
You can't do projects and the daily work. It just...
And 300 emails flown and then teams screaming and shouting.
Yeah, you couldn't do it. I had all my stakeholders. I had salespeople. I had the products lads. People had to get into houses because people were still buying houses, even though it was 2010. And I had people trying to jump into fixed rates and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So quick story, fixed rates, get into that. The bank had been visited by the regulator. All the letters had to be changed for people going into fixed rates
right.
From a regulatory perspective. That became a manual process. Excel sheets, mail merges. There was no snazzy technology to deliver a 14-page letter to a customer. Right?
So I'm getting a sense here, somebody had to physically do that.
I had to have somebody at the printer printing these letters so that they wouldn't get all mixed up. And I had to check every letter personally.
Read it, sign it.
I was under instruction. When we delivered that, I had a very good manager that worked with me who was the expert in the mail merges and managing the data. And we would print this stuff and I would have people that I would sit with differently depending, because we had five different mortgage platforms,
mm-hmm.
right? And everything was different. But I was under the instructions that if they go out wrong, someone's going to get fired.
Mm.
Now, they never said, hey.
Yeah, it's going to be you.
It's going to be you. Yeah. But I was responsible and I was managing all of these people. But I was told to check all the letters and sign them.
Yeah.
So I had to do that. So I'm doing that. I'm managing 100 odd people probably at that stage, 150 people. I'm getting 300 emails a day. I'm in back-to-back meetings. I'm on audios. I have a PA managing the executive mailbox, the stuff that goes into the CEO's box that has to be answered. And I have lots of corporate knowledge and something has to give.
Mm.
So.
Just before you go in, because
yeah.
I'm feeling where we're heading next.
Yeah.
But I just want to wind it back a small bit first.
Mm.
When you go back to as far as your dad,
yeah,
with the and you were open about the alcohol that he brought up,
yeah,
and maybe the abuse he had there, very good man, but just caught an addiction.
Yes.
Did you ever feel in your whole career that maybe, like we say, alcohol addiction, oh, alcohol, drug yeah. addiction, look at them fucking poor fuckers over there.
I know where you're going. Go on, yeah.
But yeah. You got an addiction.
Absolutely. I had a to-do list, and I say it in the book, I had a to-do list the length of a football field.
Yeah.
Okay. Every time my dad had a drink, he got a dopamine hit.
Yeah.
And he would have another drink for. Every time I got something off my to-do list, I got a dopamine hit.
Now, that's the reason why I'm asking you this.
Absolutely. Because without a shadow of a doubt, Paul, I got a dopamine hit. And I would work 90 hours a week to get something else off my to-do list. And I realized, so something had to give and I suffered mental exhaustion.
Yeah.
My brain was fried. The doctor told me I needed to stop. I needed to slow down. I needed to get away from a computer. I needed to get away from a phone. I needed just to rest. Okay. So I realized later, right, my counseling and stuff, that I was doing to my family through work what my dad had done to us as kids through drink. Right. I was present, but I wasn't present.
Mm.
Okay. Now, to anybody listening to this, what I'm saying to you is I would get a phone call from my family and I wouldn't answer it. Not good.
Mm.
Okay. I would be told there's a school play on. Will you be there? It starts at 7:30. Oh, I can't go. I've got too much to do. Would always be my first response. That would always be, I love my kids. Now I would get there.
Mm.
But was I there? I was physically there. My phone's in my pocket on silent, on vibrate, vibrating away in my pocket with stupid stuff that people are chasing me for because there was no boundaries.
Mm.
You could get an email, you could get a phone call at any time. This was just the environment that we were working in. Mm. Okay. Because everybody wanted a piece of, you know, you want your loan offer, there's a problem. You know, Brian Kennedy runs that department. You've Brian Kennedy's number. You're going to give him a buzz.
Get the job done.
To get the job done. So I came home from when I did that particular day where I just knew I needed some help. I got in the car and I drove home and I don't remember getting home. I just remember pulling up outside the house. Okay, and I explained what caused it in the book, but I got home and I went into the house and my wife looked at me and, you know, I'm 40 years with Martina, you know, we're together since we were teenagers. She's listening. I love you, sweetie.
So we should have given her a link.
But I went into the house and, you know, Martina can read me like a book. And she just said, "What's up?" Okay. And she brought me into the sitting room and I sat on the couch and I just said, I don't know if I can do this anymore. I for anybody who has been in that dark place.
There's plenty of people in my network.
Yeah.
And when you're talking like this now, you're standing the hairs up on my back.
Okay.
And I'm I know there's plenty of other people, and that's why we really expect you coming on tonight.
Yeah.
And letting us know, because sometimes we, like you, didn't notice
yeah.
the speed. And then you're lucky enough that something broke. Some people it breaks and it's too late.
Yeah. So I suppose what I tell people is, look, I'm genuinely very lucky and I'm blessed to be here, right?
Yeah.
Because our mind is a strange thing. Our brain is a strange thing. The voices that we tell ourselves, what we tell ourselves in our head, we say things to ourselves that we wouldn't say to some other human being.
Yeah.
Right. So I sat, I slept for about an hour and a half. I was exhausted. Don't remember going to bed. Don't remember much about that weekend. Monday, I'd gone to the doctor on a Saturday, refused all medication. I didn't want medication because I had this thing about my dad.
Yeah.
And anyway, Monday morning comes along and, you know, I got Martina to ring into work and say he's going to be out for a number of weeks. Right. And
so that alone to you is like.
Complete failure.
You know you're not there when you hear that. Like.
Complete and utter failure. My Cedric is the voice in my head. I named
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
Okay. I named him so I could manage him. So when he's telling me I'm useless, when he's telling me that my early educators were right, I wouldn't amount to much, that I'm a mammy's boy, that I'm, you know, a crybaby. Okay.
And on the other side of the coin, you're at the top of your game in the country.
I'm at the top of my game. All right. I am going, smashing it. I go into a room and people are looking at me going, I wish I had your job. And I'm kind of going, am I good enough to be here? Now, that's not unusual for people.
Yeah.
And we can work on that once we understand. Like, I couldn't take a compliment.
Yeah.
Because my early educators and stuff kind of taught me that mindset about, well, I'm not really good enough. And what are you telling me? I'm doing great. Well, I'm not really doing great. But you see, if you gave me an objective, I would take that objective to the next level, right? So how would I explain that to you? I was a pretty handy footballer. I just played at a decent level.
Yeah.
Okay, I had a football trial in England. If I played football, I was a different animal on the football pitch in sport.
Yeah.
I was a completely different animal. I'd go across that white line, I would be the most formidable soccer player, rugby player that you could meet.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife hate watching me playing football. Because I was a different person. I don't
wasn't
know
you.
I don't know you. You know, yeah. I would kick people. I would be aggressive. I would be a completely different person. But I couldn't bring that. I don't know whether I wanted to bring that into my corporate life, but I couldn't bring that confidence.
Yeah.
Right? But if we won, I'd be ecstatic. If I didn't score, I'd beat myself up.
Mm-hmm.
If we lost, I would beat myself up. Even if I scored and we lost, I'd beat myself up because I didn't score another goal or whatever. See the mindset and the voice in my head telling me all this? So you're probably going, Brian, you're a basket case.
Well, I don't know if you were sent here by someone or, you know, did someone pick you out just to come here, because we're living and breathing this.
Yeah.
And I mean, the beauty about this conversation tonight, yeah, this is going to go out to a lot of people, and a lot of people that are very successful and a lot of people that may be trapped, because it's usually a lonely game to let everyone know.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you can't manage them expectations, it's everything that you're fucking talking about. I'm like, shit. Well, I think I'll shut this shit down now. Me and you need to go upstairs and bolt that door and figure out what the fuck is wrong with me.
Well, the gas thing is, you know, on the Monday morning, my wife was gone to work and Martina was very worried about me, I have to say. And I'm kind of going, look, I'm okay. I'm okay, right? I'm not really okay, because you're never going to tell the truth in that situation.
Yeah.
You know, my voice is telling me I'm a failure. My voice is telling me I have been found out.
Yeah.
I am in rock bottom.
This is flying around your head now.
This is my head telling me, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
You're an idiot. You've been found out. See? Ha. See? Can't take it.
Be shamed now. Everyone knows now.
Absolutely. Right. Can't show vulnerability. Can't show emotion. Okay. So I'm sitting on the couch and I'm watching Jeremy Kyle, and it's Monday morning and the kids are gone to school and my wife has gone to work. And I just feel myself getting emotional.
Mm.
And I sometimes get a bit emotional when I think about it, because it's a defining moment in my life. And I felt this emotion welling up and I fought it. I fought it.
What age were you at this?
I was 50.
50.
I was 49 and almost 50.
Yeah.
And I fought it. I fought the emotion. It was like something in me was going to explode and I wouldn't let it explode. And I fought it, and you can't let it out. You can't burst this suit of armor. You can't show this emotion. And I just cried like a baby. And the snot was all over the place and it was wiping me nose. And
you're on your own at this
point. I'm on my own in the house. The house is quiet. And I literally, I cried uncontrollably. And I could see myself from the ceiling sitting on the couch crying. Sitting on the couch and I'm looking at myself from the ceiling.
Someone left your body and...
I'm just telling you, I could.
Yeah.
And I stood up and looked at myself in the fireplace and in the mirror, and I didn't recognize myself. I just saw this. I'm 47. I've got gray hair. I've got red puffy eyes. My nose is full of green snot. The tears are flowing from my eyes. I haven't cried like this for I don't know ever. And I'm angry with myself. And I'm feeling guilty. And my early educators were right. And I just heard this voice calling my name. Okay. And I don't know whether I said this to you when I was talking to you before, but when I was a kid, I would sometimes walk down the street and I would hear this voice call me, and I'd turn around and there'd be nobody there. And I always put that down to my twin sister, Yvonne.
Dad passed away
at 3 months.
Okay.
That was with me. And I had made a pact ever since I knew I was a surviving twin that I would live my life for the two of us.
Mm.
And at that point, I realized I had failed her. And it hurt.
Mm.
It hurt. Because I was chasing success, a corporate career, success. What does success look like? I mean, what does success look like, right? You're chasing it, but you don't know what it is. And something told me to go out into the garden, and I went out into the garden, and I won't tell you the full story, but I had this interaction with a little robin in the garden. And from the result of that interaction, I decided that I would get rid of all the negativity in my life, and I would have compassion for myself, and that I would believe in myself. And I would tell Cedric in my head that he can go and take a hike.
You can say it loud and clear there. There's no issue here.
And the thing was, I accepted Cedric. I was no longer going to fight Cedric. I was going to welcome him into my head, but I was going to manage him.
Mm.
Okay. And I did a lot of work in over the coming number of months where, you know, I went to some counseling, and a funny kind of, hey, listen, you know, it's not all doom and gloom, but a funny story in my counselling. I always wanted to run a marathon, I told the counsellor. And I had been, you know, soccer player, rugby player. I was a sprinter. I was a winger. And, you know, you don't run marathons to lose your speed.
Mm.
And I always put it off. And this thing came to me. Hey, why don't you run the Dublin Marathon and give back? Run it for the hospice, whatever it might be. And I bounced into the house this day and I said to Martina, great idea. I said, this is April, okay? And I'm kind of going, I'm going to run the Dublin Marathon in October.
Now, this is when, so
I'm going to counselling for mental exhaustion.
You're absolutely
Exhausted mentally. Yeah.
And your brain's telling you, let's go for a big challenge now.
Let's go, right? And Martina said to me, now, bearing in mind, she knows me like a book.
Yeah.
Okay. What? You're suffering mental exhaustion and now you want to exhaust the rest of your body. Are you insane?
Have you definitely lost them now?
Right. Now, Les Brown will tell you, sometimes when you have a goal in life, the people who you respect, love and look up to will tell you you shouldn't do things. But I'm here to tell everybody it's your goal.
Yeah.
And once you can take a moment in the present, then go for it. Okay. And I went for it and I ran it and then I became an ultra marathoner and, you know, and I gave back by raising money for the hospice and stuff like that. But I guess what came out of all of that was I came back to work. The first thing work did was put me on a thing called an action contract, which was the first step for disciplinary because I had been out of work for 14 days, over more than 14 days straight.
Yeah.
And I'm going, hello? I suffered mental exhaustion working here 84 hours a week to try to keep the show on the road. And now you're putting me on a disciplinary.
84
hours a week I was working.
Fuck.
For a considerable period of time. And if you figure that out,
that leaves, there's 168 hours in a week.
Yeah.
And you've dedicated 84 of them.
I'm up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm getting 2 or 3 hours sleep. I'm not talking to my wife. I'm not talking to my kids. I don't realize that, by the way. Okay. And when I was off sick, my kids asked Martina, had I been fired? Because they never saw their dad at home.
For that period of time,
unless we had gone on holidays. Right. So I was there when they were leaving for school and I was there when they were coming home and they're going, what's going on here?
And when you were on holidays, were you there?
No. Sure. When I was on holidays and all the letters that I had to sign had to go out and I delegated it to somebody else and the letters went out wrong.
Yeah.
And I got a phone call when I was in the States and the blood drained from my face. And my wife will tell you when I took the phone call, she knew there was something up.
Mm.
This was obviously, you know, before I suffered the mental exhaustion, this was the pressure that I was under. And Cedric was telling me, there, see, you let somebody else do it, and fuck it up.
Yeah.
See, what now? Now you're screwed. Now you're going to get fired.
Mm.
Yeah. So the problem is that when you don't set boundaries, how can I put this right for people?
So how would you put this? Your career is on the wind down. The madness is over. How would you put this into? I know you've obviously motivational speaking.
The madness is over, Paul, because I've decided when I'm going back to work, I have realized what's important. Okay. I have suddenly realized I have a really nice house. I have a beautiful garden. My garden is as nice as the garden I sat in when the guy told me that he screwed me over and not promoting me so many years ago.
Yeah.
When I had said in my head, I'd love a house with a garden like this.
Mm.
I have a house and a garden like that. But here's the kicker. My wife went to see that house and made an offer on that house before I ever saw it because I was too busy working.
Yeah.
And now we sit in the house and it's beautiful and it's great and the kids and the dog loves the garden and it's got a pond and right. Self-awareness. Understanding what we really want in life. Understanding what success is, taking a moment. I don't mean to smell the coffee or smell the roses, okay? But, you know, you do not need a crisis in your life to change your life for the better.
No, and that's what I'm trying to say. You are one of the lucky ones, I know.
Blessed.
But again, you're going to, I'm not saying the word prevent,
yeah.
But we're all on that. I really, truly believe when we talked earlier on about maybe an alcoholic or someone that's on drugs,
yeah.
I look and I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'm in suit today, but I'm as fucking bad as him.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing these things that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And maybe sometimes when you're that going ahead, like how does a young Paul Green or a young member in their group or maybe someone that's dealing with a crisis from the bank, how do we now learn from this? How do we learn from your crisis that we don't? Okay, going for it anyway, right?
Yeah,
so let's just take that fucking out. We are going to go for it.
But listen, absolutely. And this is where sometimes people, I'm not telling people not to go for it.
Yeah.
I'm not telling people don't be successful. What I'm saying to people is you can go for it and you can have success if you understand what it is you want to do and what you chase, right? Yeah. So there is no point in chasing success to the detriment of your health.
Yeah.
Because if you haven't got your health, I'm telling you now, you have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Okay? Because everything will collapse if you don't have your health. So I coach people every day of the week who suffer with stress. I help them identify their stressors. I don't give them advice per se.
Mm-hmm.
They learn that by the questions that I ask them.
Yeah.
And by them looking at their lives to see what it is. Now, you either want to change or you don't.
Yeah.
I worked in a very fast-paced environment. I went back into work, and what I had to do was set boundaries. Okay? Some of those boundaries were, you know, if you think I'm a bit soft in the head now and I can't take the pressure and you think you have to walk around eggshells around me and, you know, let's mind Brian, right? That's none of my business. Why do I care what you think about me? People will listen to this and some people will go, God, that was great. Some people will say, don't know.
Mm.
I don't care. I want to help people.
So did you allow yourself to develop a skill set to say, fuck off, when it's done, it's done. When I'm finished at, you know, we talk about this work-life balance, which I just can't pinpoint it. Don't know where it is. Don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
But if someone's like, you had to have developed, whether it was through your complete exhaustion or maybe you hit the ground that hard that you're like,
yeah.
So Les Brown says, you fall on your back, you better look up, if you want to try and get up. But again, you had to have allowed some sort of structure in there to go, okay, this is life. It's very, very precious.
Yeah.
This is business. It's very, very precious. I don't want to fucking die.
Yeah.
And I think that's the...
So I sat down and I give you an example of one of the exercises I did. I sat down and I took an A4 size pad and I wrote one thing. I thought about all the positives in my life and I wrote one thing per page.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did the same for all the negatives in my life. And then I sat back and I looked at the table and I saw all these positive pieces of paper scrunched up over here and I saw all the negatives over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the negatives and I decided I was going to get rid of all those negatives out of my life. And I did.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the setting the boundaries go. You have a pal. You spend 2 hours on the phone listening to his problems. He doesn't take your advice.
Mm-hmm.
You're exhausted after the call.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you continue doing it? I know it's a pal, but we all have responsibilities. Why are you exhausted after you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So some of those calls that maybe happened once a week became once a fortnight, became once a month, became once a quarter, then don't happen.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want that in my life and I set a boundary and I didn't do that. And I looked at all the positives and I looked at all the things that were positives in my life, what was important to me in my life, why I was doing what I was doing.
Mm.
Okay. And then I said, okay, well, I don't want any more promotions in work. Yet, a couple of years later, I ended up being the boss of the department because there was all this stupid restructuring going on. Mm. And they asked me to do it for a couple of months and I did it for a couple of months. But I would have taken somebody's arm off years ago for that job.
Yeah.
but I had no interest. I had no interest. But here's the thing. Recovery is a long period. Mm. Okay. 5 years after I had finished my counseling.
Yeah.
I'm running an ultra marathon and I can hear the music. If anybody's listening has run a marathon, you can hear the music from the end.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a 63 kilometer ultra marathon.
Jesus around the, Christ.
Around the hills and mountains of Connemara. And it's a fantastic race. Guarantee, if anybody's listening, do it.
Yeah.
You learn so much about yourself. Okay. And I met this young guy and he's struggling and I'm going, okay. So I had a peanut butter sandwich in my bag and I took it out of my bag and I gave it to him. And I said, look, would you eat that? We had a couple of kilometers to go. So anyway, he ate it and we're jogging together. We can hear the music. Boom, 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 boom. And I like to run on my own. And I'm 30 years older than this young fella.
Yeah.
And I'm going, I need him to fuck off. Excuse me.
Yeah, no, that's right? Okay.
Because I need to be in my head.
Yeah.
I'm tired. I need to finish this, right? But I want to finish it my way. So I said, listen, you're much younger than me, far away. And he had told me, he was French, and his wife and his 3-year-old were at the finish line waiting for him.
Mm.
Okay. I said, look, your family are waiting for you at the finish line. Go, whatever. Sure. I'm plodding along here doing my own thing. I didn't care about the time. It was all about just doing it for me.
Yeah.
Enjoying it and mindful running and one foot in front of the other and taking in the scenery and all that kind of stuff. Right. Anyway, we're coming down and we're coming near the finish. This is like maybe 15 minutes later or half an hour later. And I see this guy. And I'm closing in the finishing kind of straight with every stride.
Yeah.
And I'm going, I can't take him in the final stretch. His wife and his 3-year-old, they're there. Absolutely. But the old Brian would have smashed that.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have cared. Wouldn't have given a crap. But I have more compassion.
Yeah.
I'm more mindful. I'm more in the moment. I understand the importance of what that means to this young lad and his wife and his little kid.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a kiss off Martina at the finish line anyway, because she's there for me at any marathon finish line that I finish. But that's the difference in changing your life, to have that awareness. Mm. And if you have that kind of awareness for yourself, that's what success is.
Mm.
Because now you can do whatever you need to do in life. Because you can deal with people with compassion. You can be hard if you want to, but you know what you want to do. You can recognize it. I'm not going to pass this young lad.
Yeah.
You know, and here's the kicker. He finishes and I go through the finish line and I'm kind of going, I have no idea how I'm going to feel when I finish this.
Yeah.
I'm going to feel tired, 63 kilometers. Okay. And I go over the finish line and I punch the air with my hand and I go, there you go, Dad. I'm not useless.
Yeah.
I'm 55, 5 years into recovery.
That just comes burst there,
and
mouth.
That comes from my soul, from the pit of my stomach. I thought I had boxed off everything. There you go, Dad. I'm not useless. Okay? And I knew at that point I had put a line under everything.
Mm.
And I had won. And I was back. And anybody that saw me saw the real Brian, you know, and that's what success is.
Mm.
That's what being bulletproof is, right? Being able to live your life properly, to be able to be compassionate, to live your life on your means, your way. To understand what the kind of people are that you have to deal with, but they're not going to rule your life.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what success is to me. That's what I learned. And that's what I'm trying to get across to people. And I look at myself and say, well, you know, going to work after seven armed robberies, going to work after a car crash, going to work after suffering mental exhaustion because I thought I was bulletproof and then proved I wasn't. But now I'm telling you I am, but in a different way.
Yeah. So then, Jesus Christ, I could literally spend hours with you because I think it's a crucial part of an entrepreneur's life as well, yeah, that you identify these things and you don't ruin it on everyone else around you while you're trying to be successful or while you're trying to fight with your own little battles in your own head, because we all have them.
Yeah.
And I'm well aware of that scenario I keep putting to, that someone puts a needle in their arm, someone puts drugs into their body, someone puts alcohol into their body, but I'm aware that
people doing work.
We're doing work
all the time.
Lead us to this book. What made you write a book? Where did the book come from? What did
The book was a bit like the book was a bit like finishing that ultramarathon with saying what I said to my dad, right? Punching the air. I had spoken to a couple of people and they had said, you know what? You have a powerful story and you need to tell that story.
It's a fantastic story and it's also going to help a lot of people.
And there are people there that might read that who, for me, if you can recognize yourself, if you can recognize, if you read the book, read it from what's going on in my head and what I'm telling you, I'm saying to myself as I'm going through the different companies that I worked for.
Yeah.
Toxic environments that I worked in, great environments that I worked in, great mentors that I worked for, horrible bosses that I worked for that didn't care a jot about you, but just cared about the numbers.
Mm.
The beatings that I took on service calls because loan offers weren't going out quickly enough. Okay. But they're only counting the first one. But, you know, I'm doing three nearly per case because people keep sending me the wrong information, the wrong address, the wrong the wrong purchase price. But they're not counting all that additional work. They have no idea of the what I call the invisible work that I was personally doing that made me work 84 hours a week.
Jesus Christ.
Because they're the phone calls from the brokers.
Yeah.
They're the phone calls from people to sort out the issue, getting this lastminute.com done, getting people into their houses.
Mm.
Getting people onto fixed rates that needed to be on a fixed rate before we ran out of the money.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. Arguing with people. Falling out with stakeholders. But you see, everybody has, with all the stakeholders that I would have dealt with, I know I got on well with loads of them. I fell out with one or two, but you know, most of them I got on well with because I understand that they had their objectives. And they were delivering on their objectives. I was just a cog in the process.
Mm.
But I had my objectives and I couldn't do my objectives if they weren't doing their piece of the work right.
Yeah.
And a lot of them weren't doing what they were supposed to do right.
Mm.
Nothing's changed. If you're sending in an application for a house mortgage to a bank today and you don't have all the documentation,
it's painful.
Number one, they're not going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
Or they'll do something and then they'll have to redo it. Well, what I'm telling you is the people that are working on that end in the bank are under savage pressure. Because if it's anything like the way it was when I was there, you were constantly being asked to do more with less.
Yeah.
Do more with less, do more with less. And that's what happens. Now, when you get stuck in that cycle, when you get stuck in that hamster wheel, okay, it's very difficult to see the wood from the trees.
Yeah.
Okay, until something like what happened to me happened.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to educate people to please, 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 can you realize if you're working these long hours, it's okay to be successful. It's okay to have a career. It's okay to push for the big job, right? Could you take a piece of paper and write down why you're doing it?
Yeah.
Why is it important to you? Who are you supporting? Because if you're not there for your wife and your kids and your partner or whatever it is, Why are you doing it? Is he doing it because of your ego?
Yeah, well, that's the other big killer in this world too. So,
but if you give back, Paul.
Yeah.
So if you take a second, it's okay. You know, I don't care if somebody has 20 houses. There's loads of people out there that have 100 houses. Oh, Johnny has 105. I need to buy another five. I need to buy six. Yeah. Right? Okay. The egos kick in. Okay. Fine. Okay. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
It's the way you, it's the way you go about it. How self-aware you are of how you're doing it. And you're giving the time to your kids and, you know, maybe you can sit down and say, well, do you know what? Maybe I'll be like Brian and maybe I'll just do a half marathon and I'll give money back. I'll raise money for the hospice.
Mm.
Well, now you're giving back. It's amazing doing something like that can help you with your mental health. Amazing. Yeah. Doing something. You don't have to be a marathon, but, you know, doing something like that and you don't do it, you're not doing it for kudos. You're doing it because you want to do it, because it makes you feel good and that you're helping other people.
Yeah.
That's got to be the reason why you're doing it. I'm coming here today to sit with you to help the people that listen to this.
Mm.
Because I know how important it is. It affects the mental health of men and women. But suicide rates for men and young men in particular.
Are huge. Yeah.
And if I can go and talk to groups and talk to companies and get them to understand, let's just say the type of boss that you're working for.
Mm.
Okay. What's the culture of the organization? What is it that makes you sit in the car looking at the building before you go into the office because you're feeling stressed? Life does not have to be like that.
Mm.
Right. There is another way. Now, the problem is that sometimes, you know, and I, as I say, I'm lucky, and I was lucky in a lot of ways, in that when I suffered my mental exhaustion and I did my positive and negative example, I put a plan in place to retire at 60.
Mm.
And I did it. Okay? But that's the difference. I sat down.
I made the plan. Yeah.
Okay. And I kept looking at the plan and I knew why I wanted to do that. I knew the reasons why I wanted to do that. And I built better relationships over the last, nearly 14 years, would you believe, since it happened to me, with my kids.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a whole gap where Martina did everything so that when something happens today, my kids will automatically ring Martina. They're adults now, by the way.
They're in their 30s and they're in their late 20s,
right? I don't mind that because I understand they do that because I wasn't present.
Mm.
But I have special relationships with them, with them all, and we do things together and they'll ask me for my advice. You know, I'm back into the point where, you know, my kids think, actually, daddy does know something.
I've
gone beyond that. He doesn't know anything. Yeah. Peace. But like they do ask me some advice and stuff. And they've been very proud of the book. And it's good because they've read it and they understand and they know more about me. And some other people have read it who knew me and worked with me have said, I would never have said you were in your head like that. Because when you came into a room, you hid that well.
Yeah.
You hid that well. But that's what we do. And men are experts. We are bloody experts at saying everything is fine, everything is great. And listen, I was dying inside as a kid, as a young adult, as a teenager, as an adult, not understanding why, because of the mindset that I had.
And you're most successful in your league.
And I'm smashing it.
Yeah.
But I can't accept a compliment.
Mm.
I don't know. And I'm kind of going, do you know what, lads? Let's take a moment and look at the awards that you got in work.
Mm.
You know, look at maybe some things that people are saying that you need to develop in that are causing you some pressure and get some help. To help you develop in that area so that you're not constantly under pressure or to understand why is that person
It's me and you and maybe some that we put ourselves under this immense stress. And sometimes you don't even know we're putting ourselves. Sometimes, and then we hear this fucking thing in our head saying, "No, no, for me to function, I need stress."
But stress is good. Okay, yeah. So let's put this to bed for a second. I'm not saying you can't have stress. Mm. Okay, I'm saying if you have chronic stress like I had, it's going to kill you.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's call a spade.
Yeah.
If you have chronic stress, if you're working 84 hours a week and it's work, 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 I am telling you, it is going to kill you. There's good stress, getting married, getting engaged, having kids, yeah. All very stressful, buying a house, all very stressful situations, but they're kind of like good stress.
Yeah.
Bereavement, deaths, funerals, mental exhaustion.
Yeah.
Negative stress. Yeah. People wrecking your head, ringing you up all the time, you know, asking you for advice, not taking your advice.
Yeah.
Okay. Bad stress. And I'm just saying, lads, let's ask for help if we need it.
Mm. So that leads me to this then, right? So say we have a group of maybe 100 people and there's a couple of thousand people watch our stuff all the time. Sometimes they can't get involved in property. Sometimes they, whatever the reason. And they listen to this tonight and they're like, because obviously now I'm just trying to park myself in my shoes, right? I might be going like, right, I need to fucking work on this because I have money. I have everything I need. I have everything that Brian's been talking about here, but I'm fighting this battle here somewhere.
Yeah.
And obviously it's like saying, well, I need to do a bit of counseling and people are like, oh geez, don't say that word around here. Keep going. The battle is good.
Yeah.
You know, and if someone reaches out to you, because I think it's you just can't put that algorithm into a computer. I always say this.
Yeah.
Someone that's been there and done it, you can avoid major, major potholes, like mentors. So they're really fucking important.
Yeah.
But if someone reached out to you privately, because I think this is going to be, Brian, can I have a little chat with you about something and then.
Well, let's put it this way. I coach people on stress. I did counseling for my chronic stress. And I'm not a counselor.
Yeah. Okay?
But I do turn people around who are suffering with stress to understand it and to get a better self-awareness, to be able to manage it, to set boundaries, to be able to say in work that if somebody's telling you to do more, that you get the confidence to say, well, hold on a sec now. I have all of this to do. Mm. Okay. Which one do you want to take off me in order for me to do this? Because I can't do the rest of it.
Mm.
Okay. And people are afraid to do that. Now, if you understand the type of boss, the color of the personality of the boss that you work for.
Yeah.
Like a red boss just wants the numbers. Won't ask you about your kids. Mm. Won't ask you anything personal. Right. You go into the room and they'll just go, tell me, bing, 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 and get out. And you go out and you're kind of going, oh, he hates me. I hate going in there. But if you understand that that's his or her personality, you go, okay, well, that's not me.
Mm.
That's just the way he is. I'm just going to go in, I'm going to give him the numbers or her the numbers.
Yeah.
Right? And you have another boss who kind of go, how are you? How's the baby? You know, they remember the kid was sick 3 months ago because they have an interest in their people.
Mm.
And you'll have a bit of a chat. Okay, you won't spend an age talking to them, but you'll have a bit of a chat and you give them the numbers and everything is great.
Yeah. We talked offline earlier on about a couple of financial companies, which I think I know a lot of them. Some are great guys. Some of them are really, really understaffed at the moment. And then you've got a lot of people like me and ringing in. And yeah, some of them are great leaders.
Yeah,
they obviously work in this space very hard to understand it. Because sometimes as a boss, you're like, we have to get this done.
Yeah.
I don't have truckloads of money. We have to get that wall up today.
Yeah.
We have to get the other side out. But I think...
But communication is key in that part.
Yeah.
The way in which people communicate and understand and deal with the people that they're dealing with. So if you have to have a wall up today, it's your problem. How do I put this? It's probably your problem if the builder goes, oh, that's a big surprise.
Mm.
Okay, so that's down to communication. Why is it down to communication? Well, because Paul's too busy to have told him 48 hours ago that he needs to plan. But if you have the time and place... where you sit down and you plan this and say, okay, this is where we need to be. Do you understand it? Yes, if there's any issues, come and talk to me. That takes some stress away.
Yeah.
Right? If you build a trust with the people who you're managing and you say, I'm with you, I have your back. but we need to deliver this.
Mm.
Please tell me if there's a problem. I'm here to help you.
So identify a line of communication for them.
Right. So the so part of also success is like you looking after the well-being of the people around you.
Yeah.
Imagine if all the people in your workplace were happy and not happy, clappy. You know, there's not always going to be unicorns and, you know, rainbows in the sky.
That's why there's tree hinges on all my doors.
but you know, supporting those people and fostering a positive culture and environment.
Yeah.
People will walk through a wall for you.
Yeah.
Right? And you will be happier in your work. But you see, the problem is that we're busy, so busy living our lives at 100 miles an hour.
Mm.
All of a sudden you're telling this guy that wall has to be up today and you're giving him a couple of hours notice.
Yeah.
And then there's an argument.
Mm.
Well, take responsibility for that. Yeah. Take responsibility for your life. Okay, I had to take responsibility for the fact that for many years I felt a victim over what my early educators had put in my head.
Yeah.
And then I took responsibility for it and said, okay, I'm not a victim anymore. You know, I'm a man. I'm a grown person. You know, why am I worrying that that person doesn't like me?
Yeah.
Why? What? Why? I don't care. Now, I don't care. Think I'm an asshole? Fine.
Yeah.
Why am I going to lose any sleep over that? Why? Yes, it kind of hurts if you think people doesn't like you. But you know what? There's a difference between letting it eat you away from the inside out and saying, you know what? Okay, I understand he doesn't like me. So what? Accept that thought that comes into your head and then say, I understand that he doesn't like me. That's not the end of the world. And you let it fly off into the sunset and you move on with your life.
Yeah. Fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. And I mean, literally, I'm going to ask you, Ozzy's saying five to me. I don't have a clue what he's talking about. I'm in a different zone. He's waving five. He goes, what? and maybe he wants five extra parts, but I'm going to ask you a favor because we had a fantastic night tonight and I know this is going to really, really, really resonate with all my members, every single one of them. We're all fighting a little battle that we have parked over here and we're just thinking, yeah, well, on Instagram and Facebook, they see us doing all this thing and we're working very successful and over here we're bag of shit maybe or crumbling and we're not enjoying family life, we're not enjoying, and take something like that away, you're like, oh fuck, that's gone now. So it's opened up the whole world for everyone that's in our network tonight to let it identify and let it peace out. Maybe people are maybe they take that a lot serious than I'm thinking. Maybe you're at the stand the hairs up on my back for the stuff that I need to work on. Maybe you need to come in here and work with my whole team and get things fired up.
If you think very simply, how happy am I today? And I'm not doing this happy clappy thing. Okay?
Yeah.
I'm just saying, how happy am I today? What's making me miserable? Is everything miserable? Well, then I need to do something about it. Because life's too bloody short.
Yeah.
How could I, with my lack of self-awareness and emotional intelligence, sit beside my best friend who was 46, dying with cancer, and ask him, should I take a job?
That's great, yeah. That is, yeah.
Lack of emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
Okay. Lack of awareness. Lack of empathy, I promised him I'd look out for his kids, and I still do. But if you take that as an example, guys and girls who's listening, right? If you're at that stage, if you think you would do that, something wrong. You need help. But look, read the book, right? If you read the book, try and be in my head. In what I'm telling you, because there's other stories in there about going into a house where I got locked in a house with a customer and he wouldn't let me out and locked me in a room with his Doberman. Yeah. Funny, just funny stories in there, right? But you can get that on Amazon. For delivery to Ireland, unfortunately, you have to go to the German site, amazon.de. Or you can contact me directly through LinkedIn, send me a message and you can revolute me. I have a few books. If you're interested in what I do, you can visit my website, bjkenomotivation.com. It's a bit of a long thing, bjkeno. Yeah.
We'll get tired to put that out to our mailing list too.
And I'd be happy to kind of try and help people. If you can just take a moment tonight to write down, what does success look like for you? I can guarantee you, it's not the 500 houses. It's not the lending of the 500 million or whatever it might be target, okay?
It's how, I'm going to struggle to write that down.
How happy your kids are, how happy your wife is, your partner is, what are you doing for them? What can you do to give back in this world? And dare I say, if you weren't here tomorrow, would anybody in this world know you were here? My twin sister died at 3 months. I promised her when I was old enough to realize that we spent so much time together in the womb that I would live my life for her as well. And through my madness and 100 miles an hour, I forgot. And through my breakdown, it came back. Right? Now, I have a faith. I am a bit religious. I'm not mad. But I have a tattoo on my arm.
I was going to ask you about this thing. So I'm asking you again, just before, because I know this is great. I have to ask you to do part two of this, because I mean, this could go on for hours. But if you'd agree in a couple of weeks' time to come back and do part two, because what is that tattoo? Because I had to. So you're an interesting man.
I have a tattoo of number 16 on my arm. And actually, I have some marathon tattoos on my calf muscles, right? Because I decided that I would mark my body after I came out of a very dark period of my life.
Yeah.
And 16 does not reflect that I'm a Manchester United fan or a fan of Roy Keane, right? It's a 16 that refers to Psalm 16 in the Bible.
Right.
Which is, I would put my life in the hands of Jesus.
Yeah.
And God, and he would put me on a path that would be the right way.
Right.
Okay, so that I am not living this life on my own. And if I start making the same mistakes as I did before, I am going to be aware to listen to something that is greater than me.
Yeah.
Okay, because that's part of our self-awareness. I'm not saying people have to believe what I believe, but if you believe that there is something greater than us that put us here, that made us, that whatever you believe.
Yeah.
Because
everybody's different,
right? Mine is just that I believe that God will put me back on the right track and keep me there. And for me, I am doing my utmost that if I wasn't here tomorrow in this world, that people would remember me for giving back for the hospice or kids with congenital heart defects or for writing a book that helped other people.
Are 100% for writing a book that will definitely help other people.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
And that's it. But look, thanks a million for having me. I really
absolutely
appreciate it.
We So my thoughts now you have me thinking I have to be careful what I say. And but my thought was like, I'm going to ask them all them questions about the banks, how to get more money out. And I was like, shut up now. I'll have to do part two. Let Brian get to know me a bit better. Because I know you're obviously an interesting world. And again, someone locking you in a room. I have to read this book.
Yeah.
Someone locking you away. I presume that was involved with someone with stress of money and stress of different things. So
and that was back
hopefully
in,
you come back for
that was
part
back
two.
In the, that was back in the day in... Gosh, the early 90s, okay, when let's put it this way, before I got to really not like the industry that I made my living in, if I put it that way, okay, because banks left this jurisdiction not because the banks couldn't make money, it was because their parents believed they couldn't make enough money, and they sold loans to different parties and they made lots of people redundant
because so they were making plenty of money, but somebody said
they're not making enough
money. you need to make more of that.
And you've got to understand that, you know, there's 5 million people in this country. This is not the UK. Now, if somebody, I firmly, personally believe, if somebody had the foresight with a sovereign wealth fund or something, they could have gone in and they could have bought one of those banks.
Yeah.
Okay. And the assets. And we all know the property is a cyclical thing. They could have made money. But I have always been of the opinion that when I sat there and I lent money to people for 25 years or 20 years, that the institution I worked for would be there to help them through thick and thin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And unfortunately, that is not the industry.
Yeah.
And I think that needs to change.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think people struggle in the industry with that value system and that morality part of what they have to make a living.
Yeah.
And but anyway, look at that's
and that's what we will get into in part two.
That's the way that is.
2008, 2009. You were well involved back then, and
absolutely,
you know, it'll help other people as well to.
And people don't realize, Paul, that you got in a taxi to go somewhere, whether it was in Ireland or whether I would have gone over to the parent in the UK. Are you here for the day? Are you what do you do for a living? You know, I'm an ice cream seller.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in Riverdance. I'm not a banker.
Could not say them words.
Could not say them words. And people don't realize, and I'm not looking for people to say, oh, the poor banker.
Like, yeah.
But you see, the people in the trenches didn't make the money.
Yeah.
The people in the trenches had all the stress and were made redundant.
Yeah.
And had the same issues with their mortgages and paying their mortgages as the people in the street.
Yeah.
And I think that was lost.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was lost. But hey, you know.
Well, on that note, you're an absolute legend. Thanks a million. I know you're going to be working with lots of our members, probably privately. That's just the way this world is. Yeah. Well, I'll happily round their team up because I have one way of teaching. It might be the wrong way. maybe then I might have to sit down with you and do a bit of my own mapping. Yeah. I think it's truly important too that I am going in the right direction, and I'm only speaking for myself. And then maybe if other members get in there, read the book, download it off Amazon, maybe link out to Tara. She can connect you with whatever way you can collect them or sign them or post them or package them. Or look, it's very important we get it out there. What's the fee in the book? What's the price of it?
The price, it's a tenner.
Tenner to read it?
Yeah.
You undervalued that. You mustn't have learned too much in the banking industry. Look,
you see, this is the thing.
Not for money.
I didn't write that to make loads of money. Genuinely, that's, you know, if somebody wants to buy that and they come to me direct, it's like a tenner with £2 postage.
Jesus Christ.
And hey, knock yourself out. And, you know, if somebody wants me to go into their company and talk to their staff and they can recognize themselves in what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, and let's be fair, some companies don't want people like me going in to talk about stress because they want their people stressed to the ninth degree.
Farm.
You know, and they don't realize that they ain't getting the best out of the people when they're working in those toxic environments.
We'll finish up on this one. And again, thanks a million for doing this. It's really, really important to us. It really, really helps us. When you said at your darkest moment, you're just bringing back thoughts in my brain of different things. Mm. You were sitting on the chair and you said, I could see myself looking down in the darkest moment of your life, looking down from your ceiling.
Yeah.
Do you feel yourself now looking down on your book and probably a better part of your life now?
The book was very emotional to write.
Yeah.
And when I sat with the editor to read it back, I was crying.
Yeah.
Because the funny thing is our emotions our thoughts affect our emotions and our emotions affect our reactions and things like that. And there are things in it that, they're dark moments that bring me back. And I just hope people can feel it.
Yeah.
Can feel it, right? But the other thing, I just very quickly, you know, I have a thing in there about my mum, who you know, was a great supporter and I loved her to bits, and she died. But a death of cancer killed her, and I watched the way she died with dignity and respect and a great faith.
Yeah.
And I learned that when my time comes, I will never be afraid.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? So to be deep for a second, that's come back from mental exhaustion, come back from, you know, living 100 miles an hour, to have the self-awareness to understand that we're not, you know, we mightn't be here tomorrow.
Yeah.
But if I'm going to die, I'm ready.
Yeah.
Because I've done what I can to make amends for, make amends, is that the right word? Yeah. I don't know, maybe it is.
Your resilience is huge.
You know, to change my life, to be a better person, to be a better leader.
Yeah.
When I went back into work, to be, you know, and to do more to give back for people. And once you think about that, once you think about your mortality, because we are, we're here tomorrow, lads. You know, that's the reality. That's a bit morbid, but that's the reality. What's your legacy?
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be bricks and mortar.
And what does success look like
for you? And what does success look for you? So write it down and say, what is it? What is it?
Maybe email it to you. All right. On that note, thanks a million again. I know this is going to cause a lot of confusion for people. It's definitely going to wake a few of us people up that think we're on the road to Mars, think we're the next Elon Musk, and we can work on it aside. And again, part two, if you're happy to, I'm delighted to do it. We'll get into the banking industry a bit more.
Yeah.
Brian, thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Thank you.